Okay, we'll call the meeting to order of the Planning and Operations Committee meeting with the Kansas Board of EMS. Welcome, everybody. We've got a kind of a short group here today, but, and a short group out in the audience, but not a terribly heavy agenda, but we'll move forward. So is there any public comments, so we don't see anybody? Somebody signed, who scribbled on this that wanted to talk but changed their mind? You?
I thought I was signing up to be here.
Oh.
Wrong paper.
It's his first meeting.
Okay, well, I was going to call it on you anyway and make you speak. So, thank you. Old business, the reserve vehicles, backup vehicles, out-of-service vehicles. We'll open the floor for discussion to that topic. And Joe, you can start if you want, if you got.
Yeah, just following up from the last Planning Operations Committee, we sent out what the comments were that were within, through the six meetings that we had between April and June. Those were asked to be put into what it would look like within regulations, so that's presented to you in the packet today. I will note that it includes all comments that went in, and there were some comments that were asked or things that were asked to be included that would actually ultimately require some sort of a statutory change before that would to occur, or it's something that was mandated that we do in statute. So, but the language is there. So the only word of caution there would just be I wouldn't blanketly adopt what was presented to say just move forward with all of that, because there are components that we wouldn't be able to do statutorily. So.
Okay, I would open that up for discussion for the committee. And I see in looking at the working group, Angela, you're here. Do you have anything you want to add? Any other members of the working group here? Okay. Anybody on, how many people we got online? Because I can't see the screen.
It's kind of tricky.
Pardon me?
18 total.
Okay. Anybody online that was on the working group looking at these? Anybody online that you can see, Joe? Or?
Alex Brooksman.
Alex, are you on? Alex is muted.
Sorry, I was trying to chat on the online box, but realized that's locked. I am online, but I don't have anything to add currently. Thank you.
Okay. Where do we go from here?
All right, well, Mr. Chair. I did serve on that work group, and I have a couple things that I'd like to potentially address in this, and then just an overall arching perhaps path forward. The thing that I'd like to start off with before we dig into regulatory changes is just to acknowledge that there's been a significant amount of change in the board members on the Board of EMS as a whole. We know a lot of this is coming from consternation over inspections, investigations, and the work on this work group was really to address some of the issues that were being found in the inspections and then referred on to investigations. So as we begin setting the groundwork, the thing that I would really like to start the discussion out and eventually move to the entire board is a transition of philosophy of the Board of EMS transitioning to a compliance assistant regulatory model. I do believe that's fully supported in the statutes and the regs, but I think that is really the direction we need to move toward, is finding the way that we offer technical assistance, compliance assistance for this versus strict regulatory, strict regulatory punitive action, move towards collaborative technical assistance, corrective action along those lines. So there are things to make that happen that I think to get there are going to have to happen. The first one I do believe is strategic direction of the board. So I really think setting the regs as they've been presented is difficult with, until we have a strategic direction set with the entire board. That encompasses many things, looking at the bylaws, the governance, ensuring that existing statutes cover what we need. And then there's supporting pieces that go along with this, policies for either investigations, inspections, many other policies that need to be all outlined. And then additionally coming in online with enforcement policy, how that'll proceed forward. So I think it's important that perhaps as this committee, we ask that request of the entire board is to move forward with the piece of how we transition to this compliance assistance regulatory model that I believe is outlined in statute and reg. So that's the piece that I would like to get into a little bit before we dig down into the regs.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this question, excuse me, just goes out in general. So one of the things that was mentioned is that there are some difficulties in the statute when it comes to compliance for us. Am I correct in that?
With some of the suggestions that were made would actually contradict what's in statute.
All right. And so the suggestions that were made contradict what's already in statute. Do you think that this would necessitate exploring future statutory change, or do you think it would be better if we just looked at what we can manage on our own?
I think if the will, the committee, the board was to change that component of the regulation, yes, it's worth it. It would be triggering a statutory change be requested on that topic.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I do believe that the opportunity, if we enter into some level of strategic planning into October, that gives us the breadth of time to get towards statutory change if needed be. What I do believe there's other legislative items that will be moved forward related to EMS. So I think that's a broad discussion that could occur hopefully in a short time frame.
Joe, would you oppose if I had kind of an update on what you and I talked about just briefly? We talked about that. I met with Joe this morning just to kind of get my feeling of this and kind of give him a little bit of background on and why I think some of the things happened. And to that, the strategic plan, and I printed it off the other day and read through it, was done like in 2012, the one that's at least online. So obviously, to Dave's comment, we need to do that. And Joe was 100% on board with that. I mean, that needs to be done. And particularly with all the new members we have and some of the things that people have been concerned about. So, you know, we'll bounce that to the full board, but then it's up to us all to set a time and a place. And I know there are some logistics challenges with that, but we're going to do that. You know, that needs to be done. As far as approaching what we think some of the concerns are, to your point today, how do we move forward to rectify some of that? Is that a board decision or a Joe decision or a joint decision, or can we even legally do it? That's the other question.
So, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I have two motions to potentially bring forward to see if it'll be allow that. First motion I ask is that we temporarily suspend routine inspections. We pause inspections while policies are being reviewed and aligned with this philosophy of compliance assistance. As I look through, it looks like the only place that inspections are mandated, it looks like in new vehicles, and that could continue. But that would give opportunity to review inspection policies. I know there are some that exist out there and perhaps some amendments come in, but then that'll help us align with that. And so as we move through hopefully strategic planning in the next short term, if we would pause routine inspections at this point until such time policies are reviewed and aligned with our new philosophy.
Just a question. Go ahead.
Sorry, just a question about the motion. So you mentioned pausing those inspections until such time we were able to review that. What would be that date certain? I just feel uncomfortable pausing any sort of inspections.
I would say until we have policies that are set. So would that be January board meeting, or what time would we have realistic policies established?
How many have we done, Joe?
How many policies or inspections?
No, inspections have we done?
I don't have that number right off the top of my head.
Well, six, as a guesstimate, do we have
60 to 70?
We've done 60 to 70
this year.
And how many do we have left, just a guess?
That'd be about 100.
100 left?
Yeah.
And do you do that on a yearly basis then and mm-hmm. start over?
Yep.
Wow.
I will offer up. I mean, that's not mandated by regulation.
No, it's not, but I would hope that if I was not in compliance, I'd be one of the ones that wasn't left. And it, well, a motion's been made. Is there a second or any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I have some comments.
Sure.
I think that I would support a pause in the inspection process until we have some clear policies and procedures in place. Not that the staff isn't doing their very best each day, but as we've felt those pinch points in the last year, it's caused headaches for staff, it's caused headaches for Joe, as well as the board, including their licensed agencies in Kansas. If we had a clear path forward that we made sure everyone is on the same page, clear expectations are noted, clear procedures and policies, and following through, what does that mean when there is a deficiency? Are we going to follow that matrix with fines? What are the outcomes? Do those go to investigations? And to have a clear line of what happens step by step, what does that look like in the future? I think it's important to have it defined where we're going so we have a clear understanding of what's expected and how to meet those expectations. And that could be communicated out to agencies and their directors, what that looks like. Because I really believe that most agencies really do want to do what's right. And I believe that providers want to take care of people and meet those expectations. As we've experienced in the past year, there's been some questions on what is the exact expectation, and many have expressed feeling that it was a difficult target when they were unsure of what it was that was going to be determined as a violation. So I would support pausing it until we have a solid plan in place, as you have new board, as you are have strategic planning, and you want to be in this compliance-assisted mindset moving forward. It would make sense to me that we would shift towards that, and until that was in place, we would pause.
Any other comments? Joe?
So I'll take the one side. I think pausing inspections is a horrible idea, but the reason that I don't think that's a good idea. One, statute does tell us that we will make unannounced inspections, gives us that authority to make unannounced inspections, which seems to be very clear that we should be doing them, especially if there's, specifically if there's some type of complaint or such that we're looking into. Although we have a larger number, and my estimates were probably way off, because what we have left are regions 3 and 5 for inspections. That's it. They've been done in 1, 2, 4, and 6 this calendar year. With those being our largest population centers, I think we might be sending the wrong message if we were to pause. I don't think there's any issue with findings being out there, because findings can be contested. And so that tool is still there to say, we don't agree with this. I will tell you that the number of findings being contested is minimal, if any. So I've had two folks contest a finding. One was damaged. It was brought by one of the ad hoc members. The second one dealt with a medical protocol issue, and that finding was overturned. So I think we have a mechanism in place to address those. I'd be extremely hesitant to be supportive of any type of a pause.
Joe,
go ahead.
I guess a point of clarification. I guess at the our meeting in Salina, the understanding for point of contestants of a deficiency or violation, we left that meeting understanding that's at an investigations hearing. Is that correct?
So neither one of the ones that were brought forth during an investigation hearing. It was basically, I had a letter that said this was a finding and I would like to contest it. And those were done prior to that going into an investigation side of things. They order, if we are to say that there's any type of a penalty or we're going to accept action or things like that, does have to come through the investigations process. Because ours is, my inspectors are going out and saying, here's what we find. They could be wrong. That it might not be a violation. We don't know that until the investigations committee looks at it and says, that's a violation, that's not a violation. Once that is done, then it truly, that's the determination that it is a violation. Things that we bring forth, it's a second set of eyes. So on the two that requested that second set of eyes, we've provided a second set of eyes and a second opinion. And if at that point, ultimately, because it is at the agency side, I don't believe that that is a violation, it gets removed. Because it's our snapshot. We were looking at the picture and we might have mistaken the bird for, you know, an iguana. And so we'll say what it was supposed to be and go on. So there are things where we do have the ability to look and say that met what the regulation said, yes, and it's clear that met the regulation, that's fine. Or we felt as though that was going to meet, we could go on. So there is the formal side of it, if we were going to require any type of action based upon those findings, that yes, that does go through the formal hearing of the side of things with investigations. So
I think that's where the confusion lies, is we've had multiple paths without a definitive path given with it. I left our meeting last month with, it was not to be contested until it went to investigations. And I may be incorrect on that, but that's been the confusion point, whereas at the time we were able to correct on site.
So correction on site means that you've acknowledged there's a deficiency, right? Because otherwise there's no reason to correct. Correction on site is local action on that side of it. So the inspection process right now, when we go out, we say, here are the findings. You sign at the bottom of the sheet that says, yep, those were the findings that were there, or you were present and saw it. You're not acknowledging that you agree with those findings. It's just that that's the picture that was presented. That communication then comes back through the findings of the inspection to the service director, where that does trigger the fact that they say, hey, we can prove this was fine, or we don't agree with this deficiency. That can occur at that time. I would say, yes, there is confusion as to whether that can be done, not done. And we're working on taking the correspondence that goes out on that, here's your findings, to try to address that component, to say if there are things here that are present, say that's an issue. If you say it's corrected on site, again, there's no reason to correct something that's not deficient. Unless you're saying that it wasn't a deficiency, but frankly, we're just going to change it. That doesn't make complete sense as to why you would quote unquote correct it. Other than to, if we showed up the next day, it wouldn't be noted as a deficiency.
So I think the issue comes out of we're getting down into some of the things that we debate, whether they're minor issues or not, and whether it moves forward, and with the sanction referencing point tool. And that's assessed, I think it's really getting down into the policies that need to be established. And I've received copies of board policies on inspections and then copies of ones that were going to be moved forward, but I don't know where that stands, if those have been revoked at this point. It looked like within that there was some discretion for some of the minor findings in that. But I think that's some of the issue of why all of the confusion around the inspections is a clear path forward on it. What do we do to contest other than in a meeting where we just reference it once? So all service directors understand that there's a path moving forward out of this. What's considered as serious, what's not considered as serious. And quite frankly, the sanctioning referencing tool that's being used, I understand in the bylaws that the investigation committees is given the authority of the entire board. I think that that's appropriate in individual cases, but when a tool is brought forward that's going to impact fines and overall punitive stance, that's something that needs to be moved forward in front of a full board. But I'm digressing. I don't want to get too far off point.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? So you said inspection 3 and 5 are the only ones left that haven't been done, and whether it's accurate or not, perception is reality to a lot of people. You move forward with that, so you're pausing inspections on the two regions where the entirety of the board resides except one member.
Ooh, that's an interesting point. Do you have the KSA? Probably not at the top of your head, but can you get that for me on the inspection, on the statute?
I would say that it's pretty obvious that this is not a planned thing, so that where people reside and what agencies they work for, what regions that they live in, I don't think that's pretty orchestrated. Pausing is the right thing to do, to pause, and I don't know that what you're bringing, I get it. I see the perception of it, but this room's not too full today, so the perception is only going to be what somebody chooses to believe. I think that pausing is the right thing to do, then you pause, but I wouldn't go off of that, because that's pretty orchestrated, and I'd say that somebody's pretty...
And knowing this board has control of what that inspection timeline looked like, especially the new people, I have no idea what that looked like. I mean, who and why those two regions were left to the end? I mean, is that just how that happened to fall, or is that, like, they do the same every year or the same pattern, or is it just that was left?
That's pretty close to the same pattern every year. We start on the western side of the state and kind of move eastern, but we do include southeast Kansas within that. Just there's 19 services, 20 services. So,
well, you're going to hear me say, you asked this question many, many times, and I asked this question at the risk management meeting at the hospital. And Dave, you're probably very familiar with Just Culture. Is this a person problem or a system problem, or a little of both?
It's both. It's a system issue. We've had a huge swing in the way that things are being conducted. I think that there are issues that were probably not identified in the past that do need to be addressed, but I think that there continues to be issues, and this is the request for the pause. And I just want to clearly state that's not reality. I don't care what region, and be honest with you, perception is, yeah, that's the eye of the beholder. I think the issue is that there is feedback from across all the regions about the issues at hand with the inspections, and we want it corrected. We want it corrected. We want a unified path moving forward.
Well, as the chair, I would ask people in the audience that are service directors, if you have a comment that you would like to make, please raise your hand or come up to the podium, either in favor or opposed, because you're the ones that are going to have to live with it. Yes, Angela, Frank, don't all rush at once.
Angela Fuller, Sedgwick County EMS. We've been inspected, so we're not included in the exemption or the pause, but I guess my fear is the unscheduled inspections for us and the surprise inspections, right, wrong, and different. We do our diligence to prepare for the inspections each year, and I don't want this to then shift to, you know, people showing up ad hoc and looking at our ambulances and having, I guess, other potential issues to deal with. But I would support that the rubric be approved so that everybody has the same idea of how they're being evaluated and scored, and that there is a clear policy of what's minor, major. That's it.
Good morning, Frank Williams, Butler County EMS Chief. The discussion is robust, and I love that. The fact that there is a system problem that continues to come up over and over and over again leads to that just culture comment of doing a pause or moratorium, or those things on that flywheel will continue to happen over and over again. I brought up the trend of investigations, the second, third, fourth violation, how that escalates through the system over something as simple as a spare truck. So those are examples of why that moratorium or pause would be important.
Any other comments? For my education of myself, do you give notice to services to come out?
No less than 1 week.
Pardon me?
At least 1 week.
Okay. Well, and I think you've heard me say this before, the purpose of the inspection is to make things right. And if you give me a week's notice, it might be much harder for Sedgwick County because you have 100 trucks than it is for Rice County that has four. He wrecked one on the way up here. So, you know, I get it. Cutting to the chase, this would be, a motion's been made to move this to the full board for discussion. Was your comment a second, or do we have a second?
We're the only that can second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it dies without it.
Did we have a second?
No.
Okay, so it died as a second. Okay. Do you have something else, or you want to jump into the extra vehicle?
The only thing that I had that was to follow that was establishment of a subcommittee for inspection policy review. So to review the policies that exist and continue to build upon that matrix that was out there. I think it'd be great. I know that the last one I saw was 2016. Joe, when was the last one approved by the board?
Matrix or inspection policy?
Inspection policy.
That's a very good question. 16 sounds appropriate.
Okay.
If that's, yeah.
So, and within that were some of the pieces that allowed discretion. It seems that's not where we're at anymore. I think to begin the review of that in combination, because I think where we're at with the regulations, if we move for the change that we're wanting so we can fall in line with some of the things that are being found to prevent the fines that will get referred, it's going to take a year for regulations to move forward, as it's been, I guess, given to us with the addition of, what is it, SB 30, having to go to legislators for approval. It's going to significantly delay this. If we can figure out somehow to move forward with a committee to look at the policy on inspections, how they're conducted, feedback on that.
Comments from the committee? Joe, comment?
It's always good to look at policy and review policy. So there's no issue with reviewing the inspection policy. It is clearly outdated. That's actually the reason it's not being used right now, is because it references things that are no longer present within regulation or are located in different spots than what it was when it was included in the policy. So an update to that policy is absolutely necessary.
We'll move that to the board. I don't know that we need to vote to do that.
Sure.
How do you envision the committee being made up? Very much like we did with the other, the reserve vehicle group?
I believe so. I think that obviously you'll have to have, I mean, board staff, the folks that are doing it to help understand that. But I think there's several members from the ad hoc committee that participated in that.
Did you pick those, Joe, or did you just open it up for volunteers?
Opened it up.
Okay. Very good. Good for the committee? Okay. You want to jump back then to reserve vehicles?
Mr. Chair, would you like to start with 109-2-1?
Sure.
All right. Some additional things that have been brought forward. I'll start on item, it'd be down at 5. It's essentially the service roster updates on to notifying the Board of EMS on service rosters. We had in that work group, we decrease or essentially remove the time for someone being added to the roster, and added to the roster means within the electronic system that we report to the state in. So just a kind of a general survey of other regulatory agencies, we don't find that that's a common practice among other agencies, kind of looking at different states. We did find some other states that did that. The only one we were left with is removing a person within 14 days of resignation, termination, or death. The only thing I'll offer up on that is I don't know that we even need the 14 days. I think it's so hard now in that system. If you're keeping anyone in as an instructor, if they're a provider, telling whether they're a employee on your roster or if they're just there as an instructor, we put people who teach for our outline agencies on the roster. I don't know that so tracking who comes on and off the roster, if it's benefit or not. I initially was going to say that we don't even need to submit it. We just need to be able to provide a list when we're inspected. I do believe that we do need to put people into the roster because the one thing it does do is it allows you to determine that they actually have credentials. So the system. So I don't know, any discussion on whether the 14 days needs to be in there or
What's the harm in it? I mean, if you accidentally leave someone past 14 days, it doesn't. I mean, we're gonna maybe get notified if they have a violation. We accidentally get notified, and then we're like, oh, we should have taken them off. Is there harm in it staying on? I mean, greater than 14 days. I guess is my question.
Other than you getting notifications for something that I mean, that was the one that comes off that you shouldn't be receiving.
Yeah, because you forgot to take it off.
Right.
That's when you realize you forgot to take them off when you got notification that they're under investigation. Yeah, I mean, I don't. If there's no point in it, get rid of it.
Right.
If they accidentally stay on, it'll get removed at some point. Probably when you're getting ready for your inspection, you're going to just realize that, oh, crap, I left this person on here. I need to take them off. And you'll probably remove them then.
I think the only other thing is statistical. We are asked fairly frequently how many active EMS providers we have with ambulance services, and we have ways of pulling service staff out and instructors out because there are other components within the system itself where we can find those things as to whether they're rendering aid or not. That's the only other thing is, I mean, I report out on that, try to at the service director briefings every 2 weeks. So it's a fairly routine pull. That would just skew those numbers, but or I could just stop reporting it too. Then that's either one.
And I apologize for everybody in the room that is younger than me, which is everyone. But with today's workforce, that can change weekly.
And it does.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it does.
I think that the thing to recognize was the reason the request is there is this on a service inspection, this is considered a violation of which you could receive a fine if this adds up into other things. Mm. If it has no meaning to it, why have it in there? So I think the June, I think there were some agencies on the list for not having people on within 7 days. I don't know that they were fined over it, but they were given a warning on it, and it's part of our service inspection.
Okay. You done with that one?
Yeah.
Move on. The second one?
109.2-2. I just wanted a clarification and understanding on line 3, temporary license. I think I know, but Joe, can you vet that out? What a temporary license, when that's used for an ambulance?
Yeah, temporary license has been when they've had a loaner truck come in from, I'll just use the example, Osage Ambulance comes in, we're going to have this truck be our truck for the next 60 days. That's when temporary license has typically been requested. Or if they get it from another service and they're going to utilize it as their own.
You have a lot of those?
No, pretty infrequent.
Any other comments on 109?
109.25. Actually, yeah, sure. Yeah. On 109.22, it's on the last page. So, where are we going to be? L, what would be L? No, J1A. The list of supplies and equipment carried on the ambulance.
Yeah.
See where I'm at. So my only question, I was thinking there had been some discussion about if we're transitioning to frontline and spare reserve, whatever the terminology is going to be, where a truck may not be fully equipped, but if we pull that one up for that day, for whatever reason, one of our frontline trucks is in for maintenance or whatever. Did we not have some discussion, or am I dreaming, or I've slept too, about not having like a list, talking about a list of equipment for a frontline versus spare? Would that not be a problem if that's where we go?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So, Mr. Webb points a very astute observation. As we were drafting the regs, realized that that was not a comment that was included within this as we were going through, but it is absolutely, as we were going through line by line on this, that was one of the areas I've got noted that we'd have a disconnect. If we head down the path of having a list for a frontline truck, a list for a reserve ambulance, a list for out of service, that's not really necessary any longer. So that was just a disconnect, but it didn't come up at the comments in the first one, and so we didn't include it in this draft. But that's absolutely great catch.
Jared, I'd had that marked too. I did insert the word list of minimum supplies and equipment carry if, because I think that was, we have it differentiated someplace in the back on minimum. I thought we did on supplies.
I mean, I thought we talked about different supply lists. So if you came out to do an inspection that day, my frontline truck may not be a specific VIN number.
Yeah.
Because that VIN number that's usually sitting in that slot is in the shop.
I think that, yeah, and this one was for the renewal. This is application. Is that not correct? This is what you have to send in on every truck for renewal. And so this would be every truck. The way it's worded, I'd have to submit a list for every truck that I'm submitted the request for license for, would it not, versus us just putting a minimum serviced list?
You're correct. Those were all of the issues that we identified this was going to cause if we left it. It was left in because it wasn't requested to be stricken from the document in June. So it was one of the items that I had questions about if it didn't come up during the discussion as to it's part of the disconnects that exist within this. And the section that you saw that said, hey, the minimum lists are going to be submitted is in the next regulation 10925. And it's proposed, yeah, way down at the tail end of these minimum lists have to exist and are submitted. And so the renewal side of it on the service would be just attesting that those are still their lists and they're current and accurate for those conditions, not specific per truck.
Okay.
In order to get everything to fix, to go together.
Okay.
I assume that that's what you guys would want, but again, that's not what I was asked to provide, so.
So does that just mean this needs struck out of this one completely? Most likely?
That would be one way to make it work, yep.
In the other one?
I'm digesting. Is that your recommendation? What's your recommendation specifically?
Well, my recommendation is we don't have two different regs that say different things. So we can't do it right no matter what. That would be the great thing.
Okay, so which one do we correct or do away with?
Well, I mean, my personal opinion, the logical thing is if we're transitioning to not tying specific equipment to a specific truck, I mean, I think I asked Joe after the last meeting, it almost seems like we're going back to the old type 2A. I've been around a little bit, not as long as you, but right. I do remember those.
Sure.
But that's almost kind of what it...
Can you just wordsmith that?
But if we just took it, I mean, if we take it completely out of 10922, strike that completely, does it cause problems?
So my recommendation to address what I hear is that the list should still exist and there should be some affirmation that they're still current and accurate, although not specific for an individual truck. If that's the case, it fits under subsection I-1, and that's where we would move it to. It would just be an attestation that the minimum equipment lists are current and accurate.
Is that for every truck we have?
That would be for a service.
Because that almost goes back to the reserve truck because...
So the types of minimum equipment lists were for basically what comes down to a frontline, any ambulance.
Ah, but you added frontline, and that is an important distinction.
So we were asked
otherwise,
to...
Otherwise, I'd ask what the minimum list is. If you're tying it to an individual truck, and I'm not leaning either way, but
so the reg was written for three types of trucks: an ambulance that's in a reserve status, and an ambulance that's in an out of service status.
Okay.
So we would expect to see if they chose to use all three statuses, which they don't have to. They would have up to three lists. That would have, here's the minimum of equipment that we were going to plan on having on each of these three types. Assign the trucks to wherever they go. It doesn't matter. The day that we would show up for an inspection, we would say, what role is this truck? You're going to say it's out of service. We're going to grab the out of service equipment list if you have one and go through that. If it's a
that fits you.
List that it's the reserve, we'd look at the reserve list and say that's what we apply today.
That makes sense to you?
That to me makes a lot of sense. It doesn't affect my service near as bad as these bigger services that are constantly shuffling trucks around. But I think that does it not make life easier? If you have,
yeah.
We have these three categories.
I guess the one thing I'll ask is out of service, why does it need any list? It's out of service. There is no minimum equipment. It might be sitting outside waiting for repair.
Correct. And each service, when they place their truck out of service, has a different minimum of what they put on there. I think it was if they yank everything off of it, or do they just yank those that are temperature sensitive off of it? Do they do individual things? It's not just all. There is language that was out of service says it's exempt from the reg for equipment side of things. And if that's where we continue, then that is the minimum equipment list. But there's still, we still require minimum installed equipment, like suctions, internal suctions, oxygen delivery systems, things like that, that are considered medication supplies and equipment on an ambulance. So I don't think you'd want to put a minimum equipment list that says you're going to take those things off, but maybe it's the things that are, you know, temperature sensitive or high rate of diversion or something like that. I mean, whatever ultimately it comes down to. That was the reason for having the variability and having that list.
I think the practicality comes is I know I've had a truck sitting waiting for an engine for 2.5 months and everything, oxygen's pulled off, suction's still hooked up, but I don't have oxygen containers or anything. Everything pretty much other than radios is pulled off that. You're not going to be able to reach it to inspect it, but reality is there is no minimum equipment on that truck.
I don't anticipate it's an equipment list that we would ever see.
Yeah.
Because again, it's optional to use. You don't have to use it. I think we would see the reserve equipment list or whatever that is would be the one that would actually get used. But we were asked to include flexibility.
Okay. Where are we at? Other than my head hurting. What's the next one, Dave?
I'm catching up. I was off in, this would be 109.2-5, and it would be the third page in on it, talking about the documentation submitted for each request for service for each patient received. I think the other piece that comes in talking about transfer turndowns farther down I had something highlighted then. I'm trying to recall what went into that. Occasionally, I mean, just at the root of it, it seems overkill on the part of a service director for some of that. We do receive those. We track our turndowns on it, but there's sometimes, multiple occurring within a time frame. Oh, yeah, the rest of the deny. I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up for a point. I had it highlighted for a point of discussion. Is there any other consternation over that, having to report out turndowns? It would be in 109.5, 2-5. It's M. So third page in on that reg. Letter M in. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Under the daily record of each request. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. I'm trying to think. I don't know that.
A good way to report the turndowns right now. If it's an image trend and we do a chart for a refusal or a cancel, But right now, if we get, and I'm just going to be real honest, if we get a weather turndown that the crews never hear about, or if we get a turndown because all, a better example, not weather, would be our aircraft are all committed, no one on that aircraft is going to know that request ever came out. It's going to sit in our TCS, which is our dispatching system, and it's never going to touch image trend. So it's that request is not going to make it to, and we've had this discussion before about there was the reason we had held off on trying to come up with a path for that was because there were, you guys didn't have a good way to receive those. So we've never, I mean, we're doing, if it gets to the crew and they turn it down for weather or whatever reason, or they get canceled, like with Butler County, when we get canceled, they're going to do a chart that says they were canceled. But if it never makes it to the crew, you're not seeing that. And if it bounces around to multiple aircraft and the pilots are turning it down for like known red weather and the crew aren't involved, you're not going to see that either. Coming from a LOGIS, a totally different CAD system that isn't reporting into, because everything's pulling from image trend.
So then by the way the reg is written, technically you'd be in violation, is
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your documentation of that in the other system doesn't track those components? Who the caller was, where the location was, the reason for denial?
We got the data. You just have no way to receive that data because it's in a...
Oh, so not necessarily a violation.
Okay.
Yeah, we track it. We're just not report. I guess, okay, yes, clarification. Yeah. Now, we do track it, and I can tell you every single one. Mm-hmm. We just aren't currently reporting it. So
correct.
I guess if this says...
just says you have to maintain a daily record.
Yeah, which we do. On record.
Okay. And I'm trying to recall who I had the conversation with that had brought this up. It was just a pinch point that they were concerned about.
Because what we've added now, it says each operator shall ensure the documentation is completed and submitted to the board for each request for service for each patient receiving patient assessment, care, or transportation.
That's only for your transports.
The first part does include, and that's what I was going to mention to Dave's. The first part of that
is about the request. The second
part and submitted to the board. Mm-hmm. The request coming in just means that we'd have to find a way to get that submitted into the board. It doesn't mean you have to use image trend. It just means we have to find a way to get it in.
Which is why the discussion was with the other air companies that all of us use some different platform of dispatching, and there's no, I mean, this was back when Chad was still here, there was no way, because he knew then too that we weren't sending those in, and the discussion was, well, there's no way for you to, no one can come up with a good way to receive them, so that's why, and we have them, we just don't have a way to send them to you without causing some kind, and I don't even know if you said, thou shalt do this today, I don't know what system, I don't even know how, with our company, how I would even get to the comm center and say, hey, I don't even know how I would pull that off. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that.
And the turndown thing has been one of the components we've been tracking on the inspection side of it. It happens in less than 7% of our service inspections where we find a deficiency that deals with turndowns or a lack of reporting turndowns. That's very infrequent when we find it. Most are tracking it, most have a way of handling that.
For that piece, you know, we get the report showing that our image trend charts are going in and they're at 100% compliance, and that's being tracked and watched, but no one's ever asked me for, show me the record of your requests. I mean, I can pull it up in TCS and show it, but I've never been asked for it.
My only thought perhaps then is if it's really not being found to be an issue and the data is really not useful because you can't, they're calling multiple agencies at that point, so tracking down actual number of patients that are not being transported is getting the actual number out would be difficult. They call us, they call AMR, they call Halsted for us, someone else, and so tracking that down, I don't know if it...
You may show five requests for the same patient request.
And we would hope so, because that's the story we're being told from the hospitals, is that they're making, although their numbers are significantly higher when they say that they're making phone calls, like in the 15 to 20 range before they get a service that accepts that, which has triggered the whole transfers and trying to get folks in and out and that side of it. So the turndowns being documented, and the fact that we can show that, no, it wasn't 15 to 20, it was 3 to 5, does help bring more validity to the fact that the system is still healthy as a whole and not as ill as maybe perceived by others.
I guess the counterpoint is I don't know that the data is valid. If it's getting put in, it's not getting put into one system to track all of that. It's not readily available. It would be difficult to validate it. So not trying to be obstinate about it, but it's one of those, if we can't get to it, it's going to be difficult and doesn't produce decent data.
Yeah, I agree.
Why mandate it? Anyway, those are the comments I have on it.
Okay. Any other comments? 102, 10928.
I'm trying to figure out which area I'm in, if it's still in dash 5. Where's the piece about changing medical protocols, minimum supply medication list within 15 days of implementation of a change? That's under BB.
Yeah, it should be 2.5.
2.5. So it's almost the last page of 2.5, right before you get to 2.8. I'd received some feedback talking about the 15 days of implementation of a change on those, and other states just provide protocols upon request, things like that, whether the 15-day piece essentially assigning any timeline to a lot of these if that's necessary. They're not going through an approval process here. It's just saying that we have our medical protocol. They've signed off on it.
So global timelines are basically there so it happens. I mean, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, is if there's no timeline, it won't happen.
Yep. Anything else in 2.5?
Can we, real quick, if you don't mind, Chair, the ambulance names, the block letters, the decal. So we've recently run into, we have multiple bases that are branded EagleMed, we have multiple bases that are branded AMR. We've tried on the licenses to, we had some broad licenses, we're trying to scale them down to specific operations as opposed to just, here's an AMR license and you got a bunch of different operations that are under different leadership on the same license. So in splitting those out and by location, I'll use the last one we did, for example, was an EagleMed ground license in Liberal. We added on that license, they got a different license, it's still EagleMed, but it said EagleMed Liberal. We had to add our EagleMed logo is the EagleMed logo, but since that license name had EagleMed-Liberal, we had to go and buy Liberal to put under the EagleMed logo to meet the requirement. EagleMed is in same thing with AMR, so we're trying to switch some. Every AMR operation is just called AMR. It's not, but in order to designate them in the system, we'll put AMR Wichita or AMR, like we're going to likely have one that says AMR Kansas City, AMR Linn County. But I don't want to have to put AMR and then Linn County underneath the logo when it's a AMR. I mean, the AMR logo is AMR, a Global Medical Response Solution, and then now we're trying to add a city or it just need to be able to. I think we should be able to have the license name and the main of it being AMR, and then if you add a location or some wording in there that I can have a, because then on the air side I've got EagleMed-MedTransCorp, but I'm not required to put, since the air stuff is a little different, I'm not required to put MedTransCorp because no one knows what MedTransCorp is on that logo. I can just put the EagleMed logo on there and it's all good. I hope I'm explaining that
correctly. What's requiring you to do that now?
The people that are coming to inspect it said it had to be on there because that's what the regulation said.
Well, the regulation is in front of me and it says, it doesn't say anything about that. It just says the service name shall be located on both sides of the ambulance and shall be placed in such a manner that it is readily identifiable to other motor vehicle operators.
Because the service name on the license said EagleMed Liberal. So they wanted Liberal under the EagleMed logo.
Okay.
So EagleMed is an operator as a whole. They operate three, four different ambulance services under that. The way the reg reads, since they've chose to operate under those four services, they are four different entities within our system. And that the language proposed was to allow, although it doesn't do it very well, a logo for the operator to suffice for being for identifying that service or that operator's whatever. So EagleMed could have a single logo for all four
locations
services. It doesn't do a very good job within the draft of saying that, and it needs tweaked, but that was the premise behind changes to it.
So that's why I just want to make sure that that moving forward, that if I want to have EagleMed in multiple locations, I can just use the EagleMed logo, that our marketing, and they're very specific on what it's this logo. Same with AMR, it's this logo. So
this is kind of the primal example of getting too deep in the weeds.
I would agree, yes.
Next, you'll want to know the pilot's name on the aircraft.
No, we already do that.
Well, you know what the FAA, what we pilots say is that the FAA isn't happy till we're unhappy. So,
thank you. That's all I had on that one.
Okay.
I think the last one on five is just to ensure that we are with this med list. It's at the last page where we have the new lines talking about the minimum medical supplies. It'd be X, Y, Z. We have front, essentially the first one would be front line, as I understand. Y would be spare med list. Sorry, get you down to where we need to be at. I need to.
So this is page 18.
So, yeah, X, Y, Z, there. I just want to make sure, you brought up the three types in our earlier discussion, and this is where Jared had brought up making sure we're matching back and forth between the lists we're submitting. So, if I understand, X would essentially be what we've named frontline. I don't know that we've formally named it, but the next one would be spare ambulances. And there's nothing where it designates for the out of service. So I just want to make sure that that's clear, that we don't have to do that for out of service. Out of service, it doesn't have to meet any of the standards.
That yeah. Kind of somewhat sort of.
Okay.
So no med, correct, no list. But there is actual added language previously in that 10925, it's subsection H under the new side. Well, it's not new.
Yeah.
Each operator shall ensure that each ground ambulance out of service has all environmentally sensitive medications, equipment, and supplies removed unless it's out of service for disinfection. And that was just if it's going to be sitting at a shop for 5 days, you take anything that's environmentally sensitive off of it because you can't guarantee it's going to be environmentally protected. But that's the only requirement that would be specific to the out of service.
Okay. I want to make sure we hit all the marks.
You done with five?
I believe so.
10928.
That I had anything marked on it. Anything else? Yeah, this is the logo.
This is what I must have jumped in. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, this is the logo.
Joe, do we have any ambulances that meet the exemption that are still in service before January 1st, 1995?
No.
Okay. So do we need even that paragraph listed?
If I failed to strike that, it was meant to be stricken. That was okay. One of the recommendations.
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Formerly J3. But yeah.
Committee comments on 10928. Okay. Air. 211,
212, 213. So 211 was not included within the packet because it just recently went into effect July 31st, and we were a little concerned that if we put out the old language with strike through and such, that might cause a lot of confusion. So we decided not to include it in the packet. The only thing that was requested to be removed out of 211 was the waterproof cot cover, I believe. And
that sounds right.
I think everything else was okay to go.
Yeah.
But that's the reason it's not in your packet, is with it going into effect last Friday. It was
okay. So what's our next step? Put a working group together. I'm looking to the committee. Do you think we could have a reasonable draft to approve for the next meeting? Or is it there? It's not there now.
It's definitely not there now. There's still clearly conflicting language that's in here going back and forth, which we need to deconflict and go through. And I think that's a reasonable next step, is to deconflict and try to get things resolved, and that's done through a committee's probably the best option.
So you're going to say something.
Well, I was going to ask Joe if it's all right. Are there other ones that we haven't addressed that you see conflicting with statute?
So far, or?
Well, that we haven't talked about today.
I think all the regulations need to be taken a look at long term for that very reason, is because times change and people change, everything changes. I think that's one of my goals, and yes, it's not going to happen overnight. You got to take steps before you can learn to run. But it also drives me nuts, and you've heard me say this, is that it's been 5 years since I came to one of these meetings, and it's like watching a soap opera. We've got to fix that. We've got to move stuff forward and not beat it to death for 5, 6, 7 years. That's why I asked the question diplomatically, is if we put a working group together and stuck their nose to the grindstone, could we have a regulation improvement for what we talked about today at the October meeting to move forward to the full board to go, this is what we think we need to do. And then we deal with these fine people that have all the answers and none of the solutions.
We're very good at that.
As far as getting it through the system, that's as diplomatic as I can be.
I accept.
Okay. Can we do that?
That's the direction of the committee. That sounds like the direction of the committee, and that's what we'll do.
Can we do that, committee?
Yes.
October. So, Terry, Mr. Chair, for clarification, so you're talking about the regulations, or are you talking about the policy
direction? I was talking about these regulations.
Okay.
I mean, because they directly impact the policies. I think the question for legal staff is how much authority do we have to change policies? I mean, that's our job. We're policymakers. Mm-hmm. But is that a question for Sam?
Oh, you've got the ability to adjust policy as long as what a policy does is it's the way that we execute the regulation that's in effect. So if you have a regulation that's in flux and try to address it with policy, you'll have a policy that's probably going to be misguided until the regulation is firmed. Once the regulation's firmed, then it's easy to create the policy because it falls in line. Trying to run them both simultaneously would be difficult, not impossible, but really difficult.
Well, hearing the conversation today, then, how could we help you take a look at the policies to make them not such a misunderstanding in the field?
So,
did I say that right?
The steps that I've taken are, one, to get that correspondence adjusted to allow clarity on that aspect of it, which I think will help drive what's necessary, what's not necessary within these regs. Because ultimately, where you want regulations to be as a board are 100% enforceable. That's, you want everything there. It's a minimum standard. Things that aren't done that are listed within, if it's listed in the regulation that it has to be there and they're not being done, that should be a problem, because this should be the minimum things necessary to keep the public safe. I don't think our regulations are there. I don't think our regulations have ever been there. We tweak them, we modify them, we get them closer each and every time. But I think it comes down to, and it's really the question that I think David mentioned right at the beginning, was trying to get these to where it matters. I think that's really the key component. Once you get the regulations down to where they matter, then the rest is, if they're compliant, they're not they're compliant. If they're not compliant, that should have been a problem. There's some sort of risk to the public, and the job is to protect the public with the provision of EMS, is ultimately the board's side of it. So your regs have to matter. You can't, if you have something that you're willing to say, well, you know, it's okay 40% of the time, but not 100% of the time, that's not something that should be in a regulation.
Well, I agree with that, but I think when we started off the conversation with some of the questions about the, specifically about the inspection differences, you know, that's we need to address that, and some of that, if you get everything consistent, needs to be communicated with all the services, like right away. I mean, soon, before the inspectors go out and continue to cause some confusion. Does that make sense?
It does. I think we have to have something that gives clear delineation as to, yes, this is a violation. No, this is not a violation. And I'll tell you, from the staff side of it, we don't have that. But that decision has to be made by the board. That's not a decision that can, unless you're going to delegate that to me to make the decision, and by you, you're three members of the 15-member body. Mm-hmm. If the 15-member body says, this is what we want you to do to resolve this, and here's how you go forward with it, that is within your prerogative to do. That's delegation of concurrent authority. We've done it in many other things as we're going through. I've mentioned this in June, whereas I'm not sure that I would be 100% supportive of me doing that, but I will do what the board wishes and the board desires. I think that's a lot of responsibility onto the executive director of a state agency that I'm not certain that should be delegated to. I think that should still be a function fully of the board. But the board has the ability to take that and say, executive director, go do.
So one question, Joe. Then as I looked at the copy of the board inspection policy was out there that was adopted by the board, signed off by the chair, it looked like it did that in 2016 to offer up some level of discretion on those things corrected on site without it being referred to investigations. It's just a recent that things have been referred there. And ultimately, you know, the goal that I talked about, the compliance assistance piece, is I'm mimicking some other state agencies. I look at a report I got in my inbox earlier, and if you're related with fire, you probably saw the fire marshal's report come out on 4th of July. So they're out, inspected 400 and almost 500 sites on fireworks. They issued 240 violations with that. The vast majority of those were corrected on site through education and cooperation with business owners. There weren't fines levied on it. It was corrected on site. Before, I would like to figure out how we move to something like that for the minor pieces like that. I certainly understand there are incidences that there were heavy ones that they addressed in there, but we used to kind of be there. How do we return to that?
So I guess allow me to restate, the fines are not automatic. So the sanctioning reference points were never designed to be an automatic application. This is it. This is the way that's going to be. That was to grant our investigations committee a tool that if they chose that fines were the route that they were going to go, it gave them a consistent manner of applying the fines. There is always the ability for the investigations committee to say we're going to accept local action as being sufficient and there's nothing further to go on with this. Note that the deficiency was there, and yes, it was founded, but there's nothing further to be done. That is completely within the wheelhouse of the investigations committee to do. So I know we've thrown around that these fines are just, they're there and they're going to be there and you're going to get fined to do this. That's not necessarily the case. And I think you do have to rely upon your investigations committee to look at these things and say, that's the reason there's expertise from the board on that committee, is to say, you know what? Yeah, it is a violation. We probably really need to look at the regulation to see if that needs to continue to be a violation. So you know what? At this point, we'll use our discretion to say there's no further penalty at this point. However, if it's the ninth time that you come in and they've got expired meds on their truck, maybe it's time to fine them, because clearly the other components, the other tools that the committee's been trying to use are not working. So I think that's, we need to do a better job of explaining that as well, is that the sanction and reference points are a tool. They're not necessarily meant to be just flat applied. But for a recommendation, it gives consistency.
And I think the request is that how do we develop the policy that allows your inspectors to have that concurrent authority to issue, to accept local action on minor deficiencies?
I think it short circuits a system, but I think since their job is to report their finding, if they're reporting the fact that this was found to be deficient, but it was corrected on site, is what the fire marshal ultimately said, then I guess that would be a component of coming back to the committee to say, listen, this is what we found, and we would make our staff recommendation is to accept local action as sufficing, to which the board then still has made the decision it was a violation or not, because maybe what we called a deficiency wasn't truly a deficiency, and the board wants to look at that and say, you know what? No, that's not a violation. In fact, you don't need to. For us to take that check out of that system seems to short-circuit it. So I think we'll get there eventually where it's just a constant recommendation of coming through, but I don't know that our regs are to that point. I think we have a lot of things in regs that shouldn't be there. So we're going to continue. We need the process to work to make that delineation. And that just my observation on it. You guys will tell me how to do it. So.
So how do you fix it?
How do we fix it? I think we can move forward with the regs to see if it moves for approval. What we have so far, knowing the timeline is a year potentially for them to be adopted, 6 months minimum on that. But I think it's that piece of establishing the policies that we've set through. You know, I'm a new board member, but given the past that I've had as a service director and being inspected, I don't have a huge amount of heartache offering that concurrent authority to inspectors for minor issues. I see no reason to tie up time pushing things to an investigations committee that is all new. I'll be frank, it's all new. We didn't have that this time last year.
Well, you're certainly welcome to bring that up tomorrow. I mean, the danger of that is, and I'm taking personalities totally out of that, but the danger of that is if this young lady and I are the new inspectors, we can look at things totally different, which is what's happening now to some extent. And that's not beating anybody up, it's just human nature. I mean,
I think that's the request, is to put the committee together to build that. So here's the tool that will be used, standardized moving forward, how these inspections will be conducted, the response, the matrix within it.
So in that statement, putting a policy group together to look at the policies would preface putting the regulation together. Or you look at them at the same time.
I understand Joe's point of running concurrently can cause problems because we'll create a policy that maybe counteracts. But given the timeline it's taking for regulations to be adopted, some of this is quicker. We found out for it to be adopted through statute change, you know, how long will we have some of these regs that have been in process, Joe? I mean,
Are ones that got announced today for public comment have been in since last November in their current version. So it takes almost a year.
Yeah.
We added 6 months onto two of those because we made changes 4 months in.
Policies don't have to go to the legislators for approval, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
No, policies are here.
Put a group together, get the policy set, the board adopts. Reality is whether that's October, I don't know that the timeline's there for that. I think January, perhaps.
Okay. Well, I would ask you to bring that forward with some recommendations on who you want on the committee, if you want to be a volunteer group like it was for the previous discussion, or whether you want some specific people from both the staff's perspective and the committee's perspective to make that happen. And we're running out of time.
I might just ask the committee on the inspection side of it. I will say, in looking at the violations that are the proposed violations that are coming through from these inspections, the vast majority of these are black and white. Expired meds is the number one violation. Damaged equipment, I think there's subjectivity in damaged, and I think that might be what's triggered a lot of this, because that would be our second highest.
What was the highest?
The highest is expired medications.
Oh.
On brand new ambulances, even, which there's concerns there, but unless they were just moving it from the old ambulance over. But our second one that we've seen, so expired meds is number one. Two is damaged equipment. Everything else beyond that are what I would term one-offs. I mean, 10, 11, 12. I mean, the others were triple digits. During the 135 inspections, they've been in 60% of the inspections that we've had to date this year. In just looking at those things. Are there other items? Is creating an entire policy revision for what really needs to be just one specific component taken care of? An overkill of sorts. Are we hitting it with an elephant gun when a 22 takes care of it just fine? Might be my question there. If there are key components that are the really those pain points, maybe those are the ones where we can enact something much quicker than a complete policy revision in a shorter period of time.
I've looked over, I mean, the existing policy, I think a lot of that is fine. I think it's in there. I think it's just clarification on a few points. I don't know that it's going to be a huge process to take on. I think the bonus to that is those documents were not found publicly. As service directors, agencies, we would love to know the standard. I know the standard is the reg, but sometimes it's spelled out differently in policy. That would be beneficial to have that tool. It would be beneficial.
I don't disagree. And I know that currently you're preparing for a inspection, and the inspection checklist, which is up on our short-term resources, is not being accessed by a lot of folks. But it's a great tool to jump in, and it bullet points the regs that need to be met. It bullet points the components that should be seen and going through. So it's not all inclusive by any stretch. It was a step towards the right direction, I thought. But
okay. And as someone that accesses the website, and you've heard this before, accessing information is pretty difficult.
This is not our website. This is through the portal on the short-term resources. Again, that's why we push that heavily to the service directors, because that should be your key component where you go look for things is on the portal, not our website.
That's
our website's
what ours
is horrible.
Yeah.
So. Agreed.
We know it.
Yeah. Okay. No business under new business, but parking lot. Doctor, are you sitting back there? No doctors?
I'm a doctor.
Are you on the medical advisory committee? Okay, very good. I was going to ask you to give us any thoughts that you might have. With that, I would entertain an adjournment. If there's no other items to come before the committee.
So moved.